Thank you for joining us, Professor Ron Dart.
Oh, good to be with you.
Today, I want to cover how municipal governments, especially here in the city of Abbotsford, have dealt with the coronavirus and the economic fallout, and what we can expect in the future with their responses. What can we expect governments to do for the second wave that's coming?
We work within provincial guidance, particularly Dr. Bonnie Henry's advice in terms of what can be done, what should be done. But it's a tension that not only Abbotsford, but the province of BC, Canada, United States, Europe, and any other place has to deal with. On the one hand, you want to keep people safe. Mm-hmm. You don't want the virus to spread at an accelerated rate. Mm-hmm. And so how is that to be done? On the other hand, you want the economy to be sailing across the water of time in a meaningful manner so that a minimal level of wealth and prosperity continues. Now, if you go too far down the economic road and you ignore the virus, mm-hmm. you're going to undermine your economy. Mm-hmm. If you go too far down the health risk side, you can undermine the economy as well. And so the task is, how does anyone at a leadership level, city, municipality, province, nation, hold together economics and health? Mm-hmm. And that's a very delicate one. As we're seeing recently, there has been an acceleration in terms of diagnosis. And so you're getting a shutting down again. And so we've been through this in the first wave. And in the second wave, we seem to be spiking actually higher than in the first wave, hence some of the decisions provincially. And so inevitably, people are running businesses. They're going to complain, understandably so, because their pockets are not going to be jingling with coppers the way they would like them to be. Mm-hmm. But decisions have to be made for the health and safety of citizens in BC, as in Canada, where Ontario and Manitoba, Quebec, it's spiking, as in places in Europe, obviously the United States. So it's living, to answer your question in brief, it's how do you navigate or stick handle this tension between health and economy? Mm-hmm. And when you're getting an acceleration of it, you have to, at a certain point, say, okay, we have to shut down or limit access to certain businesses, which can potentially be means of passing on the virus.
There's starting to be a societal conflict between two thought processes. One saying our liberty is more important, is being violated, and one is saying public health is more important. Even after coronavirus was to leave, God willing, by next year, could it leave a lasting societal impact that we might have to deal with for decades to come?
Well, within the political tradition of liberalism, liberty has always been held in tension with responsibility or accountability. And so for people who say liberty or freedom is everything and nobody tells me whether I have to wear a mask or not, but the very implications of not wearing a mask leads to irresponsibility in terms of accountability to other people. Mm-hmm. And so those who want to use liberty as a means of subordinating responsibility or accountability, what they do is inevitably they lead to a lessening of liberty for others if they are infected. Mm-hmm. And so this narrow and simplistic view of liberty that nobody tells me what to do, leads, on the one hand, it can lead politically to a form of anarchy, but it also leads to a perpetuating of the problem itself of coronavirus. And so it's a misread of what the liberal notion of liberty is about, because liberty and responsibility, even within the history of human rights, I'll be teaching a course next semester, upper level class on human rights. And the early history of human rights is which you always hold rights together with responsibility and accountability. Mm-hmm. And so, of course, too much accountability and responsibility and order leads to totalitarianism and authoritarianism. Mm-hmm. Too much liberty leads to the losing of liberty. it leads to anarchy, then chaos, and then inevitably the people on the right say, bring in the police and the military. And so people don't seem to realize the further you push liberty, the more you get chaos, the more you get chaos, then people on the right want to bring in police and military to restore order. If they're not careful, they create the very conditions that they want to oppose.
Most businesses right now, not only in the Fraser Valley in British Columbia, but across the country and across the world, are feeling the pinch of this virus economically. How do you think governments currently are doling out stimulus packages, but how far can these packages go from the federal government, and when will they say enough is enough?
Well, this is both the dilemma at a federal and provincial level. This is why recently Christiana Freeland has talked about deficit spending. Because if you say the government is not going to intervene or support businesses that are going through difficult times, people have less and less money to spend. The less money you have to spend, the less money circulates, and you really slip into an accelerated recession or depression. So the government is in this difficult position. One of the ironies, of course, is that people on the right historically have wanted less and less government intervention, but many of them are business people. As business people, they're feeling the pinch economically, so they want the government to now intervene to bail them out or to get the water out of the boat as it seems to be going down in their businesses. So all of a sudden, they're swinging to a center-left position. Mm-hmm. So at this particular time, how long and how far can a federal and provincial government assist companies which are going through difficult periods in their history to stay afloat? And how deeply in debt does a government go to do that? And when they do, how are they going to recover that debt? And what's going to be the role of taxation and other means of breaking out of that? But it's, again, one of those difficult tensions that any government has to live with. If you just do laissez-faire government out, well, that's going to have a huge impact on businesses. The boat's going to sink and go down, and that will have a huge impact on the economy itself. Yeah. You have too much government intervention. The government goes deeper and deeper and deeper into debt, which then has a long-term implication for citizens.
How likely is the Emergency Act going to be used in as a last resort for the federal government to take stronger measures for the coronavirus?
It depends on how accelerated the virus becomes in terms of its rapid spread. Now, if increasingly so citizens take responsibility and know how to properly social distance and stay within bubbles over a period of time, then the government will not have to act in those extreme measures. But on the other hand, if people do not do that, the virus spreads, then what is the role of the government in protecting its citizens in an immediate crisis like this? I mean, we're obviously not as bad in Canada as the United States or Brazil or Mexico, France recently, and some of these countries. We're trying to take preemptive action so that it doesn't go down that path. What's the role inevitably between government and citizens working together hand in hand to minimize the accelerated growth of that? You just can't say the state is responsible or citizens are responsible. They need to work together for the greater good or the commonwealth of this country, province, municipality, and nationally.
How do you think activating the Emergency Act will have an effect on provincial and municipal power?
Within the Canadian tradition, federal, provincial, municipal governments have different powers in terms of what they're capable of enforcing. So much would hinge on how far Trudeau and a federal government either enforces or works together with provincial. And then, I mean, if you push it really far, of course, you have police monitoring. I mean, that's real extreme, monitoring what's going on at local, provincial, federal levels. Hopefully, it will not go that extreme. And I would think at this point, what they're trying to do is the federal government working with provincial governments and municipal governments together to avoid extreme measures. Yes. So that, again, we can deal with this so it doesn't take off as it is in other countries of the world. And I think Trudeau would be slow to move on extreme measures, given his temperament and tendencies. But under certain conditions, what is the government to do if you're getting accelerated diagnosis and deaths within a country? Something has to be done, but what? And that's the dilemma at a federal, provincial, municipal level.
Since we last talked, there's been a provincial election, of course, and we now have NDP majority. How do you think that that's going to change the response to COVID-19 in the Valley?
I think one of the reasons the NDP was voted in, because for the most part, whether a person's on the right or the center or the left, they have imperfectly but wisely been able to, in British Columbia, at least keep COVID up to the time they were elected under control. Whether a person's on the right, center, left, one of their first concerns is to be alive rather than to die. And NDP, I think, has done a good job of doing that. And I think people on the right, center, and left realize at a very basic level, they have done what they're supposed to do as a government in terms of caring for people, not only at the virus level, but economically and helping businesses, which have had a very difficult time getting through this crisis.
Mm-hmm. And so then what do you think are the repercussions of that? Like, now that the people have felt that change, how is that going to manifest?
We're experiencing a second wave of COVID, which is having, at a basic level, an impact on people's health. And as a result of that, is going to have an impact on businesses, which the government is having to step in and close down or give less hours to. You get two elements on the right. One is, well, just ignore the illness. It's not really a problem. We're overreacting to a crisis. So get out there and sort of barter, truck, and trade. Other people on the right realize you need to hold together in tension, economy, and health. And so the NDP for people on the far right is seen as the problem. On the soft right, I think they see them as honestly trying to work through an issue that no government is going to perfectly work through. Those on the center left obviously are much more supportive of what the NDP is trying to do. Hence, for the first time in the Fraser Valley, wouldn't be the first time actually, but in the Chilliwack area, an NDP MLA, and then of course Abbotsford Mission with Pam Alexis beating out Simon Gibson. Interesting enough, the COVID crisis has reshaped, at least momentarily, the political landscape in the central Upper Fraser Valley.
We have, over the last few weeks, of course, seen a huge rise in the COVID cases. I remember stories about outbreaks coming from, you know, restaurants, parties. There was the Granville Street fiasco, mass congregations of people. And you've said already that that is sort of representative of a division between these two schools of thought on the pandemic. What do you think people who are still going out and acting like everything is normal should keep in mind moving into the next few months of the pandemic?
The question is, how are people to use their liberty wisely? And if people only think liberty and I can do what I want, how I want, any way I want, they are going to be agents of spreading the virus, which then leads to a lack of liberty and a lack of health for one and all. So those who only think liberty without responsibility, the irony is they're going to lose their liberty, or those they care about are going to become ill and lose a healthy liberty. And so this is attention. How does any political system honor liberty, but also saying liberty has to be used responsibility? And we're getting this played out so graphically. It's not just an interesting intellectual discussion. It's played out very graphically because the implications of it come forth so rawly and so graphically. Is I use my liberty in this way, the virus spreads, other people lose their health and their liberty and some their lives because of it. And so these principles are being played out in a way that nobody can unless they've got their head in the sand like an ostrich, can miss. And so to those who only think, give me my liberty to indulge my appetites in large groups in any way I want, the danger of that is that you may be spreading the very virus and creating the conditions for your lack of liberty if you're not aware of it in the long haul.
Mm-hmm. And you've said in the past that the Valley is quite ideologically conservative. How do you think that that's going to impact the number of anti-maskers or folks who don't want to follow public health guidelines?
The form of conservatism in the certainly the central upper Fraser Valley, you can even, I think, stretch it to Langley a little, is not a form of irresponsible use of liberty. So when you come to something like a health concern or a virus, these are not people who use their liberty irresponsibly. One could differ with their understanding of liberty in terms of a market economy, lighter tax, lighter state, but they also realize that if you use liberty irresponsibly, you lose liberty. And of course, the coronavirus makes this obvious. For example, across the border in Washington, the person who ran for governor, you know, he has large gatherings. Nobody wears masks. Liberty is the flag he held high. And at a certain point, the governor, who gratefully so was elected again, just said, this is absolutely irresponsible in terms of a misunderstanding of the language of liberty. Fraser Valley is such that I think for the most part, you can have extremes libertarian types in the Valley, but the form of conservatism in the Valley attempts imperfectly so to hold together liberty and responsibility. So I don't think you'll get the level of reactionary tendencies in the central upper Fraser Valley that you would get in certain states in the United States.
What kind of conservatism really is it in the Valley? What does the behavior of that demographic look like?
Libertarianism on the right and anarchism on the left are very different political philosophies than, say, social liberalism or conservatism. Now, they do different things with their freedom. The content is different on the right and the left of libertarianism, the right, anarchism on the left, but neither can be equated with conservatism in a thoughtful, meaningful sense. So, yeah, important to dissect and be quite clear that these are two different ideological positions and they have serious implications at a practical level and in the trenches.
Have you noticed any big societal shifts around you since we last talked that you want to discuss with us?
Well, since you have a bit of an interest in the central upper Fraser Valley, I think one of the more interesting things, which can perhaps be explained partially as a result of the COVID, is the voters deciding to go NDP, particularly in Abbotsford East. Central Abbotsford has stayed much the same because it tends to be more establishment soft, right, of center. Abbotsford East is, it wavers much more than Abbotsford Center, Abbotsford West. And so that's a shift in that the former mayor of Mission won and so now works with the NDP government. And then also in Chilliwack, although that was more of a case of both the Liberal saying some pretty silly things publicly, and then the political right being divided, which then split the right vote and then brought up an NDP in the center. As the population of the Central Fraser Valley grows, it's not as right of center overwhelmingly as it once was 10, 20, 30, 40 years ago. A new tidal wave is coming in and another tidal wave is going out. Now that will take a few years to fully sort of land on the shore, but there are significant shifts going on in the central upper Fraser Valley and we're seeing hints of it. It'll be interesting to see what happens post-COVID, whether those shifts hold, because often what happens in an emergency crisis, when the emergency is over, people revert back to where they once stood, the positions they hold, the ideologies near and dear to them.
So really the question is, are these ridings going to stay orange?
Yeah. And so, for example, there was a few years ago, an NDP MLA voted in the Chilliwack area, but it was more of a protest vote. And then when the next provincial election came along, she was voted out. Or say in Alberta, the previous premier, Rachel Notley, NDP, which hardly can imagine Alberta voting NDP, but it did vote Rachel Notley. But it was a protest vote against a form of conservatism. Conservatives thought they had betrayed them. But once they had rebuilt the party under Jason Kenney, Rachel Notley was voted out as premier fairly quick. So sometimes votes are just protest where people on the right feel betrayed. So they sort of vote out those who are near and dear to give them a pause so they can rebuild a party. I mean, this is happening, I would think, in the United States with Trump as well. There are a variety of Republicans who turn Democratic, not because they're Democrats, but because they hope to get Trump out, rebuild the Republican Party for another term. So a lot hinges on why people vote against those they usually vote for and what's their long-term agenda rather than just a short term. So when you think in a more calculated way of why people do what they do, next provincial election will, as I said, reveal whether this is really a long-term commitment or just a short-term decision to get through this period of time.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Ron.
Thank you for joining us, sir.
Oh, you're welcome. Bye-bye.